Welcome, movie fans. Thanks for joining us for episode 93 of Reading Between the Reels, the premier podcast of sociopathic mustaches. If you're a new listener, we're so glad you found us. If you've been enjoying the show, please tell someone about us. You can post on X or Facebook, write a review on your favorite podcast catcher, or just recommend the show to a friend. I'm Craig Dickinson, and I'm joined by my co-host, Corey Heitschmidt, who's back. Yes, we're back. How's it going, guys?
Oh, it's so good to be back. It is so good to be back. I took some time off. We're going to talk about a great movie today, and I feel like this may be my last show based on what I the pre-conference that we just had.
Justin, how are you doing?
We're coming into this a little tense because Corey just found out that Craig and I did not super enjoy this movie.
Yeah, so let's go into we're talking about the Gray Man tonight.
The Gray Man? I thought we were talking about Barbie.
Oh,
you said Ryan Gosling's best movie. I jumped. I'm just kidding. We are not talking about Barbie.
I mean, there is a Ken doll line in this movie.
There is a Ken doll
line. There is a Ken doll line in this movie. Yes, we do.
So, Corey, I'm going to give you the floor first since this was your pick. Why don't you tell us your overall thoughts on The Gray Man?
The Gray Man. Listen. I'm going to tell you right here, this is a nonstop thrill ride from the beginning to the end. This movie has everything in it. It is, okay, I admit it's your typical super spy, gets pulled out of prison because he has morals and he takes the high ground. Okay, I get that. And he, you know, and then you have some flashbacks and build his character and he really is a good guy, you know. And it's a similar to a James Bond, a Mission Impossible type show. Right. You just don't have as many flashy toys as you do in Mission Impossible as James Bond. But this movie is from beginning to the end, a constant pump of adrenaline. And Ryan Gosling, I got to admit, I was not a big fan. I've seen him in a couple things, but he gets in this movie. He delivers some of the best witty, straight faced lines.
I will agree with straight face.
Listen, I got it. The faces I'm getting from you guys. And Chris Evans is in this movie.
Yes.
You're flailing, Corey.
This guy is the perfect villain.
Yeah. This guy goes from Captain America, where he's kind of Mr. Goody Two Shoes, to let's see him cuss a little bit and let's see a dark side of him. And holy cow, Captain America is an incredible villain. Let's get that guy in some more roles like that. He is a sociopath. So from the beginning to the end, big, loud, exciting, thrilling. There's a neon-drenched opening sequence, right, where it is neon and fireworks and explosion. And from there, you get fight choreography that is absolutely incredible. The Joe and Anthony Russo, they can do no wrong. I'm telling you, they bring in some power into this movie as a director. They bring in special effects. They bring in fight choreography. They bring in top-name stars. This movie deserves a sequel. Absolutely.
There's a lot to unwrap there.
You follow that up. We're ready to battle here.
Corey, I think you are in the wrong career. You need to be a hype man for something. Like something really bad.
For Ryan Gosling.
I don't know what. Like you need to be a hype man for like adult diapers or something. Like you could sell me adult diapers. I would do it.
I probably could.
The elasticity is amazing. It just holds everything in. Like I would buy from you.
I'd give you a guarantee. If you want me to take a crap in a box and mark it guaranteed, I will. I got spare time.
I don't know what that means.
Some viewer out there knows that reference.
Tommy.
Oh, okay.
You broke Justin, Corey.
I broke you Justin. Justin, you don't like this movie?
I just missed you so much, Corey. should I go next here?
Craig? Yeah, go ahead.
Okay.
I'll wrap.
All right. So quick summary of those of you that haven't seen the movie or need a refresher because you immediately forgot after you turned off your TV having watched it. Because I've seen it twice. And the second time I watched it, I'm like, have I seen this movie? Because it's completely forgettable. So it centers around Ryan Gosling, who is a convict who was broken out of prison and basically becomes like an off the books assassin. For the CIA, discovers some stuff that he shouldn't about the CIA, and now the CIA is after him while trying to cover his own tracks. And he has like cheat mode and aimbot on all at the same time, like He basically can't die. And there's no point in trying because he kills everyone. And you got Ana de Armas in there for reasons, weak motivation for her character. She's helping Ryan Gosling out. Sure, let's throw in Billy Bob Thornton as well, who phoned it in completely. And then, yeah, for some extra drama, let's throw in a child that you have to save. I would give this movie like a good, fat, resounding, like, meh. Like, it was super, it was entertaining. Like, it was cool. We had some cool dialogue. But, like, the character development of everyone was just sad. Like I said, Ana de Armas' character motivation, like, the CIA's after you, therefore I'm going to be after you first so I don't lose my job. I don't get it.
That's real life. That's a real life story right there.
Speaking of real life stories, right before the show started, I went to ChatGPT and I told ChatGPT to make an action movie with Ana de Armas, Ryan Gosling, and Chris Evans. Make it a spy versus spy thriller. And ChatGPT spat out basically The Gray Man. Like, I'm pretty sure this movie was written by AI. And they're just like, because let's do it.
AI recognizes quality. That's why. It's stealing. It is plagiarizing from quality.
I think AI famously
it is plagiarizing from quality.
Does not like quality. Or is not. Anyway, it had its moments. I think Chris Evans was amazing in every scene. Like, if we're going to be positive
you.
Here.
Yes.
He had some amazing lines. Ryan Gosling had a couple lines, but especially because last week we just did Blade Runner 2049, which Ryan Gosling is amazing in. And then to see this, and Ryan Gosling is, oh, what did you say? Straight-faced?
Very Corey? Straight-faced. Yes.
Very, very, very straight-faced. He has a couple of lines that are funny, but Chris Evans definitely steals the show. That being said, if there was a sequel, I would watch it because I did enjoy the movie. But it doesn't. It was you watch it and you're like, oh, that was cool, and then you're never gonna think about it again. It does nothing for me upstairs. Like, I don't feel like it pushed any boundaries. Yeah. Anyway.
Yeah.
Sorry, Corey.
I'm hurt.
I have to echo that too. I mean, my first thing was it's fun, but it's forgettable. And that some and this is the thing. Is you have, yeah, you got Anthony and Joe Russo, you've got Chris Evans, you've got Christopher Marcus and Stephen McFeely writing it. So you have the team behind the last two Captain America movies, Henry Jackman, who did the music for those two. The score is completely forgettable, and it just feels like paint by numbers. And so it somehow feels like less than the sum of its parts. And you throw Ana de Armas in there, Billy Bob Thornton, actors who I love in many, many things. And I'm sorry, Gore. It's not quite fair that we just watched Blade Runner 2049. We have Gosling and Ana de Armas together, and they have amazing chemistry in that film. And they have zero chemistry in this one. Evans is by far and away the best thing in this film, in my opinion. But it feels like they were like, hey, Chris, you go do whatever you want, be hammered up, chew the scenery. And Gosling was like, okay, I need you to dial it down. No, that charisma that you have, that you're so good at, no, less of that, please. That's how I felt about this film.
But here's the thing. The chemistry between Gosling and Evans is so believable. I feel like this is Ryan Gosling. I've seen him in the movie with Steve Carell, and it was a great movie, and it's a love story. And I think
Crazy Stupid
him,
Love, yeah. It's a good film.
Yes, which is a great flick.
Like it.
And when I see Gosling, I think of the kind of guy that's in these love stories and, you know, that I've sat down, I watched with my wife on a couple shows.
Notebook,
and I've never saw him as an action star. I meant to watch him in The Other Guys. I just watched the trailer for that again with Russell Crowe. That looks like that might be hilarious. I got to watch that now. Because after watching this, I feel like Ryan Gosling, I look at and I think, man, this guy's an action star too. He can do the goofy things. He's done the Beavis and Butthead thing and pulled off the absolute slapstick. But then I see him in The Gray Man and I look and said, wow, this guy has some incredible choreography, some fight technique with him to go toe-to-toe with Chris Evans and take him down and still make it look very good. Like I feel like this could have been a couple superhero origin story type show in a Marvel universe. That's what the Russo brothers did here. They're incredible at doing that kind of stuff, building an origin story. You're saying they're not building character enough. I feel like they built his character tremendously. We get some flashbacks. I feel like there's a death of the mentor. I feel like there's a hero's journey story in here that's pieced together in a different order. And I love it. I cannot wait to watch The Fall Guy with Ryan Gosling because I feel like he's broken out as an action star.
Yeah. And it's the nice guys, Justin. That's what you're that run with Russell Crowe. He's quite good in that.
Guys.
Yeah, he's very good in that. He's very charismatic, which is again why I'm so disappointed about his performance in this film.
Also and with Blade Runner 2049, he's
an android.
He's straight faced in that, but he acts his little heart out somehow. Yeah. We talked about that last week. I don't
know. Bless your little heart out. Bless your little heart.
Yeah.
But he's very witty. He is great at just being kind of dry and witty. He's not the kind of guy who delivers a punchline that is laughs. He delivers a line that makes you go, oh, that's good. You know, like when Billy Bob Thornton calls him and says, hey, how are you doing? Right after he crashed out of the airplane. And he goes, emotionally, I'm not in a good place. That's a great line. That's fun. Hilarious. It's witty. It's keeping in the character of the story.
No, he had a couple of good ones. It just wasn't like, okay, Corey, I want you to like give me 5 developed character traits of Sierra Six in that movie.
Sierra Six, absolute powerhouse morals. He would not kill an innocent person right in the beginning of the movie. That's what led to that big blowout firework scene. And then the neon fight down at the bottom where he kills Sierra 4. Okay, there's one. So he's a guy. 2, he defended his little brother who's getting abused. So we go flashback. That's where he lays the foundation. 3, he's absolutely.
No, hang on. I'm going to say that goes with 1 because that's where the same one.
That's his moral code.
His moral compass was set.
That's one. That's right. 1.
He this goes, is a hostile podcast. We're going hard on Corey.
Dang it. Sorry. He meets the girl. He is able to take care of her. He makes a change of heart when they make a comment about him being like family. And at that point, he attaches to her the same moral compass that I will protect you and I'll die for you and do whatever I got.
That's still one. It's still one. Little sibling. Still one.
Okay. They're all the same. Listen, he's a one-dimensional character who does fantastic.
Okay. We'll come back to this, but we do need to get back to the structure of our show. So there's the structure. Let's talk about. So I did find some good things in this film, and I'll start off because I've been pretty hard on this already. But talking about cinematography, composition, color, camera work, I will say that I do like quite a bit the opening shot, or one of the opening shots with the two actors directly across from the table. I thought that was a beautifully set up shot where you have Fitzroy, who's metaphorically and literally trying to get Six to come over to his side. I thought that was really elegantly composed. You also see that in the Sierra 4 flashback, those two scenes kind of rhyme with each other. So I thought that was an effective way where he kind of puts himself in that same place as Six puts himself in the same place that 4 was. And I also thought that the fingernail pulling scene later in the film, I thought that was really carefully staged and effective that we didn't need. It's very much like the scene, or at least it reminded me of the scene where he cuts off his ear in Reservoir Dogs, where you'd swear that you saw that actually happening, but you don't because it's subtly done and you can see the reactions and, you know, it's shot from low angles and those kind of things. It cuts to facial reactions and those kind of things. So I thought those two particularly were very nicely composed scenes. So there you go, Corey. There's some good stuff in this.
Well, and here's a couple. There in the very beginning, in the beginning fight, when he is supposed to take out that the Sierra 4, he's wearing brighter colors, right? And as he's walking around, there's bright colors. It's a party. It's a, you know, disco, New Year, whatever. He's got the bright colors, and the whole thing is going in and out of darkness, everything in the back. But he always stood out in the scenes in the foreground because he was wearing, I don't know if it was a white, but it was a little bit brighter colors. So I felt like that was putting him, he's the white, the light, in the dark, having to fight through everything. The Russo brothers, they do a lot of fast-paced, multiple-angle sweeping shots.
Yeah, a lot of drone shots.
A lot of drone shots with high-speed drones that take off now. You can recognize those in any movie. Shout out to Highlander who did it the first time without a drone back in the day, because that's the same type of effect. Get that long sweeping drone shot through something.
Did you guys find, because I liked a lot of the drone shots, especially during the car scene, like the car, tram, train thingy.
Yeah.
Which was a fun scene. But there were a couple drone shots, especially at the end, that I found to be really distracting. Like you're no longer thinking of the plot of the movie. You're now thinking, oh, they used a drone for that. Like it was clear.
The hospital one might have been gratuitous.
Yeah.
Oh, gratuitous. Ooh, nice.
Yeah, there's a lot of stuff at the end of the castle. And stuff.
Now, the car scene, though, I think was incredible because it is a lot of quick, fast action. The thing about that whole scene that they did, I think you could put that in a Mission Impossible movie. That's how high quality I thought that whole scene was. It was not over the top fake. And some of Mission Impossible's car scenes like that have been over the top fake.
I'll
agree. I felt like the Russo brothers kept this one level with those fast paced cut scenes that you still thought this is a believable car scene that could take place.
Yeah.
You know, it's not over the top like he's invincible and he's the only one who can shoot straight.
Yeah, I thought that one was really interesting, and you saw him like employ some kind of neat tactics that I feel like you're not used to seeing in action movies, like the scene where he's looking at the reflection from the building, and he shoots the guy from the reflection. That was pretty neat. But no,
you're coming around. Thank you.
Yeah, well, I'm not hating as much. I think we can all agree. I think Craig's here too. It was enjoyable, but forgettable.
Yes.
So yeah, there were a lot of like, oh, that's neat, and then that's all.
I feel like they do a lot of the Russo Bros. They do this a lot with some of their stuff. They always have like some kind of a blurred focus somewhere, you know. So when you're like when they're walking somewhere, you get the guy. He's crystal clear, and there's a little blur in the front and a little blur in the back. And I always feel like it makes the characters, it's almost like a tilt shift. It makes the characters look a little bigger to me. Like they're bigger on the screen than the area that they're walking through. So I noticed a few of those that they did that. And then the other thing, Craig, I think for composition, I don't know where I've seen it before, but the end credit scene with the little brass statue things they do. I want to say it's kind of like what they did with DC in Man of Steel.
Well, Aquaman has credits like that too. Well, there's a couple of comic book films that use that same kind. It's not necessarily
a ton of MCU movies.
Yeah, there's multiple comics, both DC and Marvel that have used that.
And it was actual scenes from the movie, like still frozen mini statues in brass, and it looked very cool.
And Aquaman 1 did that.
I think the Russo brothers, being comic book type guys who've done that level of movie is that's what you get there. So.
Those credits were like 15 minutes long, too. They were
huge.
Super long.
Cutscene. I could have used a cutscene to say six will be back.
They are making a sequel.
When I went to watch this movie for the second time, the first time I watched it was when it first came out, and Netflix still remembered where I was at, and I'm like, oh my goodness, I still have 15 minutes left of this movie. Why didn't I finish it? And I looked, I'm like, oh, it's all credits? What the heck?
That's a lot of credits.
Jeez.
Yeah, Corey, I want to come back to what you said about the focus thing, because I did have a mention of that too. It kind of goes in and out of focus, like right after the explosion at Cahill's place.
Yeah.
Which I thought was really, he's walking around the street and it's kind of like it's disorienting for him. So I thought that was kind of a cool and effective way to do that. I have a couple other things with color just I want to mention too. Like when we first see Hansen, right? That Lloyd Hansen, that Chris Evans character, the room that he's where he's torturing that guy, it's kind of sickly yellow, which I think is always used pretty effectively for something poison or rotten. And then of course the scene where Carmichael is questioning Miranda and he's trying to keep his agenda secret, that's really dimly lit. Like you'd never have if you had an office building like that and that was the lighting in the room, people would be walking by like, what is happening in there? Something bad. Like you can't get away with that.
Every time I watch movies like this,
I'm going to call HR.
Yeah, every time I watch movies like this where they have like command center, I'm always thinking, can we get a few lamps in here?
Yeah.
I mean, because nobody could see.
Yeah. So I thought that was kind of funny. I mean, it's effective. I mean, it's because a casual moviegoer is not going to go, that's weird that they're trying to manipulate into thinking, oh, there's something hidden in this guy's agenda and whatnot. But yeah, but you can't in real life. Anything else for composition before we talk about sound and stuff there.
I think I'm good for that.
I don't think there's a whole lot to say.
The stuff I'm looking forward to is coming up because I got a few things I loved about the rest of this.
Okay, cool. Corey, do you have some stuff for sound that you want to talk about?
Yes. So I think the very first time I watched this, I did not know what to expect. And I got to admit, I thought, Ryan Gosling, what the heck? I watched it for Chris Evans, not for Ryan Gosling. Yeah. And I fell in love with Ryan Gosling. Okay, Justin, almost as much
Who
as you love Ryan. It's Ryan Reynolds. Yes, Ryan Gosling. I think the name Ryan just signifies greatness at this point. I am any movie he's going to be in, I'm going to go watch it.
Blade Runner 2049, Corey. It's right Barbie, there waiting Barbie. For it. Blade Runner 2049, got
to
watch
I'll
it,
get to that
so
one.
Good.
Okay. I'll get to that one.
And he's excellent in Barbie. I didn't
I
care
think
for
we
the
need
film,
to revisit Blade Runner 2049. Like, we did the audience a disservice by doing it without Corey.
Just yeah. to hear the, oh.
God. The opening sequence interrogation scene where the credits aren't even done running, you know, the little ads for all the studio companies.
Yep.
And you start getting them talking with the interrogation scene with Fitzroy. Mm-hmm. And in my mind, I thought, this is your 2003 classic. Yep, that's me. You're probably wondering how I got here kind of scenario, you know, and then it's like we're going to get a flashback to where he's at. And I thought it was going to be the end of the movie. You know, and then we were going to get a flashback to what happened that led there. Instead, it's a beginning of the movie and where we're going. So I thought that was kind of cool. The soundtrack, the way they start with that kind of intro with the music or I mean, with his voice and stuff. I feel like the music was good. Silver Bird is a great song. Almost Guardians of the Galaxy feel to me with the Star-Lord kind of thing. Classic song like that. Playing it multiple times and then putting the album cover on the in the movie. And yeah, then
I was a little irritated they put all those classic songs in there.
Yeah.
I'm like, you can't have a score like on your own good enough. You got to steal from
that's,
other
that's
people.
That's how
you,
I felt.
Dude. You haven't earned this. You can't do that.
And he's written some good scores. That's my thing.
Now, you know, the train score, the whole train scene in not Vienna or wherever. That was a superhero soundtrack escalation throughout the whole thing. The way it builds up to the very end when you know the scene is coming to an end. And I'm telling you, that was a great soundtrack, that music mixed in with that whole thing and everything going in. Because I feel like if you love the Avengers and Civil War and you love Russo movies, I put a cape and a pair of tights on Ryan Gosling and you would love this movie. If this is anybody else except for Ryan Gosling.
This is borderline blasphemy, Corey. Don't compare no. those. No.
Yeah, I know, Corey, but
if I put the Civil War, the Winter Soldier, what's his name? Doggone it, escaped me just now. Who's the Winter Soldier?
Stan?
Bucky. Who plays Bucky? I put
Sebastian,
him in this
Sebastian
role.
Stan.
You'll love it. You'll love this movie. Sebastian Stan.
I love Ryan Gosling in most movies. He's just not good in this. But Henry Jackman does the score, who done, among other things, Kong Skull Island, X-Men First Class, which is a fantastic score.
Yeah.
Very memorable, right? And then, like I mentioned, Winter Soldier and Civil War. Both of those, are, yeah, he's leaning on like some of Silvestri's work and whatnot. But the only thing that I really liked with his score was like the kind of has like a bluesy harmonica thing at the intro. And like if you would have leaned into that, I think, as kind of a theme for Sierra 6, I think that would have been cool. But most of the time, it's just using these. Yeah, you know, you've got this kind of cultural thing that's kind of this touchstones. But instead, we get Silverbird is the use of Silverbird. I thought was pretty good, especially as a callback to the first time that he was with the girl, and then later on with Claire, and then later on where he's like, "Here's the record," and like, "I'm going to do that same thing," and it's going to be super loud. I thought that was a good use of diegetic music. That made a lot of sense. I also thought it was kind of interesting that they had the Oogum Boogum song by Bretton Wood. During the cargo plane scene that starts off as non-diegetic and moves into diegetic during that, I thought that was kind of fun because it's kind of there's this weird dichotomy between how that song sounds and the violence that's happening on screen. That's kind of clever. But again, I wonder, I didn't find anything on this. I wonder if there was a score and then later on it kind of got pared down and then we're going to use these songs instead. Feel like the rest of his work.
Did you catch
Sorry, go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, did you catch Silverbird being played and then when they did the flashlight fight where the guy sneaks in and they kind of go all of a sudden you're in a long shot view from like a drone looking down at the house and the Silverbird song got muted. It was real dull, as if you were from a distance listening to the speaker.
And that's always fun.
The flashlight flailing through the windows, and then you come right back, and then it's loud again, and the fight's loud.
Yeah,
I thought was a cool effect.
The sound design is fine. I think the sound design is good. I just think that the score itself, the orchestral score, is just not memorable. Which that's a big thing with whether or not I'm going to get replay value on a film.
Mm-hmm. So I feel like at the beginning of the film, they did a couple things that if they would have just built upon that, it would have gone really well. For example, when we're first introduced to Sierra Six in the prison, he seems like, he's kind of this mysterious figure. Mm-hmm. We're going to learn more about him. He's got this weird fascination with like gum. You can build on that. You can like get a lot of character out of just like that is my favorite flavor of gum. They never really did anything with it. Same with the score. Like it started out, like Craig said, you got the harmonics in there and it was great. And it's like, you never did anything with that. And then you get a little bit of his character where, he doesn't want to shoot the kid and add extra collateral. You don't really get much with that either. It's like you set some stuff up and then you never followed through. You just kind of relied on the action sequences to pull you through, which were great. I loved the action. Except did anyone notice that the whoever did the sound for like the punches and the kicks, it was a little off. Like a millisecond or two off.
Syncing was off.
Yeah, like
Foley work was done.
It pulled me out of it a little bit. And the punches, like I'm thinking back to when we did Creed 2, 3? Which Creed was that?
We did the first one when the third one came out.
Oh, that's right. We did the first one.
Creed 1, yeah.
Yeah, those punches, obviously that movie's all about punches, but those punches like sounded, not that I know what a punch sounds like, but sounded legitimate, you know, like, oh, that sounds like it hurts, where these movie punches punch. Kind of sounded like they were from like Mortal Kombat from the original Nintendo. Like they just sounded old and recycled.
Sorry, Corey.
I get it.
Anything else with sound before we talk about the performances, which at least with Chris Evans are pretty good.
There's a couple other performances in here I think are noteworthy.
So. Let's talk about them, Corey. What other performances do you find to be?
All right. We all know Evans noteworthy. Is the sarcastic, smart aleck, dark villain, bad ethics, right? He is incredible.
Yeah. And I would just say here that that reminds me a little bit of his character in Knives Out.
Yeah.
Which is he's the best part of Knives Out too. He's fantastic.
And eat poop, Chris Evans says a couple F words in there, I absolutely am on board with it.
Yeah.
This guy's a good villain.
Yeah.
And then Billy Bob Thornton, I feel like, just plays Billy Bob Thornton. Like I feel like that's not a stretch for him to just play the guy who's got a family I care for. I'm going to run his covert program. And at the end, I'm going to grenade myself because I'll let you get away.
Like that could have been anybody in that part, I think.
Because
he's charming and weird sometimes, and here he wasn't.
But Danush was absolutely incredible. He played a Vixen, right? He's the guy who comes in and he beats up Ryan Gosling and Danny and takes the little microchip and gives it back to Chris Evans. And the thing about him, I thought his fight was so good with that. I feel like they should have cast him in Marvel Eternals. He would have been a great addition to that cast. Like he was great. And then at the end, he kind of has a little come around. He says it's not about the money.
These people have no honor.
Like I would like to see that guy in some more of these movies. Like he showed, I can do the fight scenes and then I can go over here and have a couple conversation scenes that are really good.
Yeah, I believe that's in the works too. I think he...
Is he? Is he coming around to something?
I believe that is like a spinoff that they've got.
And then, I don't know how to say his name, Reggie Jean Page, who played Carmichael.
Mm-hmm.
If he is not the dirtiest, filthiest politician that I've ever seen in my life, you hate him in this movie. And that's a good thing because I felt like he was your typical, oh my gosh, just the venom between him and Claire is really good, right? Like I thought. Like just the way those two hate each other and they're both, you're just waiting for either one of them to snipe each other off. Margaret Cahill, Alfred Woodard.
She was
great.
She's barely in it, but she's fine.
Sacrifices herself.
Just like Billy Bob Thornton does.
Yeah, I rewatched. Felt to me very Matrix when she died, how she was just in the kitchen waiting. I mean, here. Yeah. And how the Oracle says to the agent, you know, you're a bastard, and then he kills her, right? I felt like it was the same type of thing, call back to her.
She just, like, reminded me of the Oracle all around, from her haircut to her apartment to the way she was smoking to her, like, the air she had about her, like, this all-knowing.
Yeah.
Yeah. They pulled that.
Hair. I don't know.
They pulled that from the Matrix.
Good makeup job on her. Make her look as sickly as her character's supposed to be. That's the one thing I will say. I will say also, I rewatched the pitch meeting for this one, and Ryan George pulled out the fact that, yes, that both his mentors blow themselves up.
They do. Death of the mentors. Now.
Yeah, but you didn't do it twice, Corey.
I know. Well, you know, you have two mentors. It's just like the
two
Jedi,
mentors,
right?
Two explosions.
Or two Siths. There's always one, and there's the other. The other part I'm going to point out, Callan Mulvey.
Yeah.
Right? Who played four. He is incredible. This guy is a great actor. He gets these small cameo parts, right? He was in the DC movies, Man of Steel.
Yeah.
And Batman versus Superman, which is one of the best movies of all time.
The greatest warehouse Batman fight scene ever. Oh, KG Beast.
Absolutely incredible.
I know.
And he does a great job
in this movie. I'm like, if Corey doesn't tie this back to the warehouse scene.
The warehouse scene, right?
What are we even doing?
This is Ryan Gosling could be a good Batman. I'm just kidding. That's too far. Here's the thing, Corey.
You got to remember. So you just reminded me of something. And this is going to make this movie even sound even worse. Because these are the guys that gave us the Captain America elevator scene.
Yes.
In Winter Soldier. That is in a. That's not even. Those guys made that, and then they made this.
I don't know. I don't have beef with the fights in this.
I'm just. But I'm just saying, like, that was like peak. The fight scenes are fine. There's really good editing in this film. You have two, you know, Oscar nominated, one who wins. Editors. So the editing's fine.
What?
But the story's just not good.
Oh, no, it's
Craig. I could go with the story because it's textbook, and
I feel like you're distracted by the story
because I feel the choreography.
It's textbook. That's the thing that doesn't give us anything new.
I think there's about four guys in this movie that Chris Evans kills to save himself.
Well, he does. He throws guys in front of him. It's pretty great.
The one guy with the grenade, he grabs him and slides him over in front of him and just lets him take the blast while Evans gets knocked back.
So here's what you do, Corey. Here's how you make this movie interesting. You kill Gosling off pretty early, and then you make Lloyd Hansen your main protagonist and just have him be the guy you're following, even though he's a bad guy. That I would watch.
Yeah, like a Suicide Squad. Like, that's what I'm drafted, saying. Even though he's like a piece of crap.
Yep.
Oh.
Give me that, because he's the one I want to spend the time with. Sorry.
Evans does steal the show.
Yeah, he's...
The disappointing thing is, like, Ryan Gosling can do it. He is an action hero in Blade Runner 2049, and he's funny in Crazy Stupid Love. And then this, it's like, you lost it all.
Yeah,
what happened?
I don't know.
Okay, but you know what? The witty banter between Evans and
Okay, so give us some witty
Gosling.
Banter.
This is the witty time. Banter. So, hey, Lloyd, I immediately don't like you. On the phone when he's talking to him because he realized he has. That's in a great line. He's like, hey, Lloyd, I immediately don't like you. I thought that part was great. And then when he sees Floyd and says, what size shoe are you? Why? You want my foot in your ass? That's a great line.
That was a pretty good line.
That was great.
I like that. Okay, I do like how he's constantly like sizing people up in order to take their clothes.
Well, he's like, are you look like a 42 long? And then after Evans is on the ground because he got shot with the dart, he says he looks like an 11. Like, he just throws that out. It's just a great.
Yeah, but like with a little wink and a nod or something. There's just no charisma in those.
Okay.
I'll pull out one though that I did like one of the exchanges where he says, well, why don't. Chris Evans says, why don't you come in on it and we can chat? My assistant will get lunch. You like sushi? He says, no, I'm good. I just had some Skittles. That's not the funny part, though. He says, tell you what, why don't we skip lunch? You can give me the asset you stole and I won't have to chop your head off. When you say things like chop your head off, it makes you sound untrustworthy. Give me more of that.
Yes.
Well, I don't know. I'm going to go, man, this is just turning into like a choosing sides here. I do. They could have. Okay.
Pick one,
I'm going to agree with both of you. I think it was great. I think there was some good witty banter, but I would have liked more of it. Another one that I liked, though, is You Must Be Lloyd. What gave it away? Oh, the white pants, the trash stash. It just leans Lloyd. Like,
that's great.
Isn't that fantastic?
Yeah.
All right. Claire says 6 is an odd name, and he says 007 was taken. So it's a great little, like, just kind of nods to other shows that are great. kind of letting you know we're in the spy movie. All right. How about this then? When they're shooting up the whole place on the car scene, and the gal says, "Lloyd, please pull everyone out now." And he says, Lloyd says, "Extra $10 million to the first guy to put a bullet in this Ken doll's brain."
Yes, this is pre-Barbie.
And the way – now, did they know he was in Barbie at this point? This is 2022. Barbie comes out in 2023. And I don't know if they knew he was going to be Barbie at this point, but it is a great line to throw that out there as a foreshadowing to what he's going to do.
Yeah.
Okay.
I really like the line where he says, who is it, the guy that – who's the boss guy? Carmichael. Carmichael's talking to Lloyd on the phone. Pulled up here and he says, "And Lloyd, I'm sending Suzanne to assist." And Lloyd says, "I'd rather you punch me in the dick." And she says, "I'll gladly punch you in the dick, Lloyd." See, no love lost between them.
Right? He goes to get in the car and he says, "We need a ride. I called not trunk." Just clever little things like that. I called not trunk. Like that's...
There's some stuff.
I'm going to say that from now on. When I go ride with people, I'm going to say, "I call not trunk."
So I'm looking at IMDb, as one does, and under their more like this category, they nailed it. They have a lot like this. All of these picks that are under the more like this, I would consider good movies that I've completely forgotten. One, Red Notice with
Great
The Rock.
Movie.
Yep, forgettable.
Forgettable, great, but forgettable. Adam Project, great, forgettable.
Awesome.
Yep. Extraction, great, forgettable. Extraction 2, great, forgettable.
Great.
Six Underground, great and forgettable.
The awesome. Old Guard,
are these all these are all Netflix films, aren't they?
They're all Netflix films, which are great and forgettable.
There's a reason that they're not theatrical films.
Yeah, Bullet Train, which was great and not forgettable.
No, Bullet Train's fantastic.
Never saw
it. This felt like this. Bullet Train's better than this, but it's still... It felt like this a little bit.
Yeah, sure.
What are these other gray man?
I think those are...
Let's see. The difference between that and this is Brad Pitt's charisma is allowed to exist.
Craig, do you need charisma in your main character?
You think you do. Because that's crazy. I'm getting down to facial expressions. And I just put... This is what I wrote. Six has a casual indifference during conversations. He just seems bored. During almost all of his conversations.
He gets sprayed in the eyes by Lloyd with pepper spray. And he says, "Pepper spray, come on, man." And it was not very much of a reaction.
Understated. And I was like, he is such this is the thing. I really like Ryan Gosling as an actor. And I was disappointed to not get the Ryan Gosling I was hoping to get. Because you market him as Ryan Gosling. Then turn him loose. Let him be Ryan Gosling. He can have a dark side and be quippy. We've seen action heroes do this for years. He can turn it. I think that he's good enough an actor where he could do that. I mean, he does that in Blade Runner 2049.
So I got a question for you. Corey, have you seen Blade Runner? I can't remember if you just hate it or you hate it.
I've seen the Harrison Ford one. It was terrible. And so
you haven't seen 2049.
I watched 2049. I fell asleep. Kind of like I did through Blade Runner, the first one.
It's one of the greatest films of all time.
I meant to watch it so
that
I could be on the show. And then, all this hubbub, you guys keep kicking me off every time I like a show and you don't. So I'm sure I'll be out for another 5 weeks. So, but I feel like Blade Runner 2049 might have to be something I give him a second shot.
Wait, no. So back to my question. He is very stoic in Blade Runner 2049. How does he pull it off in that movie and not this one?
I don't know. I feel like he pulls it off in this movie incredibly. I think the banter in this is a fantastic movie. I think he's the opposite of Chris Evans, who's flashy and boisterous and witty and sarcastic. And Lloyd
is the trash dash.
Right? And then Six is straight-faced and witty. He equals the witty, but he's very straight-faced and controlled and calm. It's a complete opposite mirror here. Versus I Spy. Opposite
here's
guys.
My issue with that though, because he's a spy. He's an assassin, but he has to infiltrate places. He's got to at least have that gear where he can be charming to get himself into places, and you don't see that in this film at all. You don't
That's
see that
Chris
side
Evans.
of
his, But no, I know, do you see my comparison that they're mirrors?
That's my point, is that Ryan Gosling's character, Sierra Six, would have to do that from time to time to get into places. But we don't ever see that.
Yeah.
He's not charming with anybody. He has zero chemistry with Ana de Armas, which is amazing because they were fantastic together. Awesome. Like, there's not even the hint. I mean, I can understand why you don't want to necessarily have a romantic subplot in this, but there's not even the hint that that could even exist. Like, she doesn't seem like she's even remotely attracted to him at all.
You can
there's
have
no
banter chemistry and charisma between characters without it being romantic, and they just didn't do it.
No, you can't. Yeah, exactly. But it should be at least, like, I mean, you have two beautiful human beings. They should at least somewhat feel like they're
also more be next to each other. Wasted than Ryan Gosling was Ana de Armas.
Yeah,
like why did you put her in there? You could have just grabbed any Hollywood actress and put her in that role, and they would have done just fine because they didn't let her do anything.
No, what happened to her at the end of the movie? We don't know what happened to her, do we? They don't wrap up her arc. She was good in this, I thought, but. Yeah,
I feel like we've been really mean to Corey. I'm sorry.
It's all right.
I'm going to say some more good things about Chris Evans. I really like the costuming choices for him, that he's always wearing those polos and khakis.
And that mustache.
They're always like, they're like two sizes too small to show off his physique and stuff. But it's kind of hilarious that he's this ruthless assassin guy who's looks like he's just got back from a round of golf, or, you know, he's got like a garden party or something he's going to.
And I feel like that character definitely would have intentionally bought that shirt two sizes too small.
Of course. Yes.
Just to show himself off.
Yes.
Yeah.
Chris Evans.
He's a D-bag, 100%.
He's just a beautiful actor in this. He is.
Give me the Lloyd spinoff. I know he's dead, but give me. I would much rather follow that character. Just like following an a-hole all the way through would have been amazing. Give me that.
It makes me a little bit sad that he was tied up as Captain America for so many years. That we could have gotten more roles from him in the last, decade.
Yeah.
I feel like that's a risk for him characters. To do these kind of roles too sometimes, because, you've been seen and typecast as such the goody, swearing, like calling out people for cuss words, like against Iron Man. Gosh darn it.
He's a good actor. He's a really, really good actor.
I had a really hard time with him when he was cast as Captain America because I knew him from Fantastic Four.
Me
too. He's a complete D-bag in Fantastic Four. Not a funny D-bag like this one, but
he does play those well.
And then to see him as Steve Rogers, I'm just like, no, so this is not a good person. He's the Human Torch.
Yeah.
Now one more line I got to quote though. I did like. There's a payoff here. Okay. I love payoffs, Craig.
Yeah.
The payoff early in the movie, he's talking to the girl. He has the flashlight fight from the guy breaking in, trying to take him out. Takes him down, knocks the guy, the guy's on the ground. She comes out and says, "Are you all right?" And he says, "It's just another Thursday."
Yeah. There's payoff. Right?
To him. It just shows this is nothing to him. It's just another Thursday. That's what I'm doing. And then at the very end, when he's telling her to go run away so that he can fight Chris Evans, he says to her, she's like, "No, I can't leave you." And he's like, "This is just another Thursday." I thought that was a great bookend with that relationship with this girl to calm and say, "Go to bed or go away. It'll be fine. This is just another Thursday. I'll take care of it." And so I thought that was great. It's a great character building arc, I thought, for me. I enjoyed the movie. I feel like it was a great movie. And so I love it.
Yeah, Corey, I love that you loved the movie. I don't grudge the fact that you liked the movie. I just didn't care for it. Yeah, it's fine.
That's right.
I liked it too. I just, it didn't push anything.
Yeah.
This is how you guys feel about Blade Runner. And now I'm on the opposite end. So I'm getting my comeuppance. I'm getting the karma coming back to get me.
Also, Big Trouble in Little China. I feel like I got ganged up on pretty hard.
That's because that movie is amazing.
You deserved that.
We don't need to rehash it. It's okay. I've just recovered self-esteem wise. Let's just leave it where it is, guys.
So, setting and design. lots of things filmed on location, which I'm impressed by that. Like, this is where the money gets spent on it, between the casting. Maybe that's what it is. Locations and the actors' salaries. I think that's where the money went. Because it's very wide ranging. I thought, like, a Bond film, I appreciated that. Like, you're going everywhere from like Long Beach, California, a lot of it in Prague in the Czech Republic, some in France, and they actually do go to Croatia and Azerbaijan. I thought that was great that they did that.
Yeah.
Some interesting things I thought were interesting here is that the opening scene in Bangkok was actually in Prague's Futurama Business Park. And the street market scene was in Georgia. Like at the beginning where he gets on the phone and
Georgia
distraction stuff. Yeah.
The South?
Yeah.
I feel like the scenes that they travel to and fight and do all this are incredible. They look nice. I feel it's very Mission Impossible feel. Very much the typical Jason Bourne, Mission Impossible scenery, you know, Prague, Vienna, these cities that you travel to that have these stone roofs. And the only thing we were missing was a rooftop chase.
I'm looking down at props, and I had the gum too. Like, my first instinct was, oh, the gum is going to be important, because I'd seen the movie, but I had forgotten the movie, as I mentioned before. I think it would have been cool. I agree, Justin, if we would have had that be like a little quirk where he's like, oh, I can't do this until I get a piece of gum. Like, even that little character beat, I think, would have been amazing. Like, I can't shoot this guy until I get some gum.
Or, like, in the middle of a fight scene when all is lost, he, like, spits the gum in someone's eye or uses the gum to, like, tie some wires together. I don't know.
That would have been amazing. I really like the sniper rifle at the beginning, though. I thought that thing was just wickedly cool. Just, it's way too overly complicated. After the squirt gun, which I still don't understand what the squirt gun was about.
Yeah, I was. Like, did I was, that have a purpose? Because he even says something like, I don't have a permit for that or something like that. It's not that kind of party. I was like, yeah. What does that mean?
Is that like, did something get cut between?
Yeah, there's something left somewhere on the editing floor there.
I think so, because that didn't go anywhere. I was like, oh, that's interesting. That's going to turn into something. No, it's got acid in it or something.
I noticed like other people at the party had squirt guns, but I don't understand why he had to have one. He put it like in his belt, so it's not like he was using it to blend in or anything like that.
Something had to have been cut from that.
Yeah.
I did like the trap door thing. I thought that whole sequence was really interesting.
Oh, I saw that coming.
I think it's fairly obvious it's happening, but I like that setup that he had a way where he could just drop him in there. And I thought it was pretty, that was one of my favorite parts. Pretty ingenious how he busts out the tools and stuff and like floods the thing. So that
why would that guy have a trap door though?
He's a creeper.
So the movie can happen.
I'll tell you this. I felt horrible when he got shot.
If you're running your business off of like referrals and, you know, I make people, you know, have new identities and it's like word of mouth business, you're not going to be wanting to like trap your customers because then your business goes upside.
He could drown
them. So
I guess maybe a creepy people come in and, you know,
he's way maybe out.
Certain creepy people you
don't. It's a protection. He's dealing with some bad guys.
I think it's so the movie can happen, Justin.
Now, the other part, that guy, he gets shot. I felt that was so cold.
What about my money?
Ruthless by Lloyd, where he just says, you know, he says real quiet, where's the target? And then just boop, boop, boop. Three right there without even looking. No look, shot in the chest, and they show him dying.
Yep.
And he just doesn't even care.
Nope.
Chris Evans just like, doesn't even like pay it.
I will sing the praises of Chris Evans all day long, but he's too good for this movie.
We're on the Chris Evans scene, I don't know where this would fit, but that scene where he turns around and like grabs Billy Bob Thornton's ears and like wrangles his ears a little bit. And then he's like, that, I just made that up.
I felt like that was probably improv. That was not the script.
Again,
I feel like that was improv.
He's ridiculously charismatic.
Because as he's doing it, I'm just like, that's a new torture. I've never seen that before in a movie. And then,
no, you haven't, because he just made it up.
He made it up.
This is what you get when you let Chris Evans go a little bit like this, because I feel like as Captain America, he was stoic. He was always straight-faced. But still
charming at the same time.
Charming,
Corey.
But he was very good. Like I'm Robert De Niro even nails it. You know, Mr. Goody Two-Shoes. Sometimes I just want to punch you in your perfect teeth. Okay? That's Captain America.
You get Chris Evans. Did you say Robert Downey? Yeah.
Downey? Yeah, Robert Downey. Yeah.
Okay.
But then you go down here, and Chris Evans is just a psychopath. Great.
Yeah, that would be an interesting alternate take, Justin. Robert De Niro is Iron Man.
Yeah, let's just get. We got the multiverse. Just throw him in there at some point.
All right, I'm going to skip down to characters, which we've talked about most of them, but I have to mention because this is personally interesting to me. So Julia Butters, who plays Claire, she's fantastic. She's also in. Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. No, is that what it's called? Once Upon a Time in Hollywood? The Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, the Tarantino film with Brad Pitt and Leonardo DiCaprio.
That one.
And the she meme. Was, great film. She was also, she was in a sitcom called, American Housewife, which she was number one, obviously. Number two in that was my daughter, Calista, and she did. Yeah, they picked Julia Butters over Calista. Oh. So anytime I see that, I go, that could have been Calista in that part.
Oh,
maybe. I don't know. But yeah. Julia Butters is great. She's got a good future ahead of her. She's great in everything I've seen her in. She's great in this as well.
She does good. She does not come off overly whiny or... Mm-mm. And they always have this kid play this kind of jilted role where they're neglected a little bit and they always have a sarcastic attitude. She doesn't come off so annoying that you're like, oh, this kid again. Yeah,
kids can be really annoying in movies. She's not. She's precocious.
Precocious.
Not being obnoxious. Justin, anything else you want to say about characters before we kind of just move on down?
Oh, I'm just trying to figure out who that Julia Butters. I don't know her from anything else.
Yeah.
No, I feel like we've kind of done the characters to death, with the exception of Chris Evans. They're just kind of mostly forgettable. Even who played the Jessica Henwick?
Yeah,
plays Suzanne. Okay.
She's
fine. I don't think I've really seen her in anything where I was like, oh yeah, she's amazing.
She's serviceable in Iron Fist and in the latest Matrix movie.
Yeah, like she's all right. Apparently she's in Glass Onion. I don't remember her in that.
Oh yeah, yeah, that's a forgettable movie too.
Yeah,
like the first one, not so much the second one. Okay,
I keep waiting for her to do well in a film because I feel like she's almost there, but. Just not quite.
Yeah. So, Corey, you mentioned Hero's Journey, but you're talking about Death of the Mentor, which, of course, happens multiple times. And there's a little bit of a redemption arc.
Yes.
With Gosling, with CRSX.
At first, he's the one who has special abilities recognized by Billy Bob Thornton, and he has to embrace that. That becomes the mentor, who then has to die.
I think I would have liked to have seen more flashback scenes of him training. I think that would have helped me a lot because I will tie this into world building too. A lot of things are just hinted at. I mean, I appreciate the fact that we saw some flashbacks of his dad, like holding him under the water and stuff. And we got to see a little bit of him grabbing the gun and that kind of stuff. And a little bit, that's what I thought was one of the most interesting and best acted parts for Gosling, when he talks about his motivation when, take his dad, because he had to choose between his dad and his brother. I think a lot more of that would have been more interesting for me.
Well, they mentioned that he's like family, Billy Bob Thornton and Ryan Gosling, or Fitzgerald and CR6. Yeah. But yeah, I would have liked to have seen, okay, why though? Because it kind of just seems like you hired him and he's just an asset. Show me some of that family stuff.
Yeah. And because this is based on a book, my gut says there's a lot more of that in the book and they trimmed it to make it fit in the film.
Mm.
So I would gather that's probably there. That's why it's just hinted at. And then we're kind of like, if I just had a bit more, it's probably there.
The formula for this with that flashbacks like that to his dad and how his dad treated him, I felt like that was very much like Ben Affleck in The Accountant, reaching back and kind of showing why he's so tough, why he's so good at what he does, how he's able to cut off the pain and move forward. It was very much like Ben Affleck did a movie, The Accountant, which is a great movie. Yeah. I love too.
And that's getting a sequel too.
It was very much similar to this type of style. We're going to give the flashback. You're going to see how he was raised and go, oh, his dad made him into this person. So.
I guess we're down to final thoughts.
I think we forgot our most important segment, which is Corey tells us a fan theory.
I do.
We need some intro music for this segment.
Yeah.
Corey's fan theory, sponsored by, and then someone's
going to sponsor us. I wrote one down up here.
Oh, you did?
Fan theory created by Corey.
It's a shared universe, an open universe with a crossover connection to Mission Impossible. That's what's going to happen. We could have this. This is part of the Mission Impossible. It's just a different part of the world. He's going to get recruited by Tom Cruise real soon. Replace Jeremy Renner.
Corey, I missed the banging.
I got it.
Next mention.
I don't know what to tell you. Dang it. Listen, here's my final thought. All right. Okay.
Here we go.
Let's talk about a final thought. I think this, for me, this is a great movie. Action sequences from start to finish. I feel like it's just a typical but good conspiracy movie, how far up does this go kind of thing with politicians that are dirty and government that's covering it up. And it's a masterpiece, I think, in tension building, keeping you engaged and thinking to the next fight sequence, how the fight's going to turn out. The choreography is top notch. It's top tier talent in all the actors, everybody from top to bottom. The Russo brothers bring in everybody that they have to make this movie fantastic. I feel like it's engaging for me. I feel like it's engaging for my wife. Wants to watch this with me because she loves conspiracy movies like this, with, you know, these government spy movies. She loves those. So that will be our ultimate test if she watches it and loves it. Of course, she loves Ryan Gosling too, so that helps, I bet. But I think this also shows a level of talent for him to capture me to say I'm now a fan of him as an action star. And I think it also just makes you just love Chris Evans all the more for everything he does, from Knives Out, Captain America, to this. So it's a great movie. I'm giving this 9 out of 10. I'm on board. This will definitely not be forgettable and will be a watcher again for me.
Go ahead, Justin.
This was a movie. It was a movie that happened, and in the movie, things happened. It definitely had a beginning, middle, and end, and climax, and action, and emotion, and all of those things. And then the movie was over. It was definitely a movie.
He wrote that AI, final thoughts with AI, I think.
No, that came straight from my brain, and I put about as much thought into that as they did with the script. So,
Yeah. You know, when I was younger, growing up in the '80s, there were sometimes made for television movies.
Okay, old man.
Well, this is the thing. Like NBC and ABC, they'd do that, and you'd have like regular drama actors from their shows, and they'd get together, they'd have like an all-star cast of TV actors. That's what this felt like to me.
Oh,
it's fine. It's definitely several tiers below a film that I would pay money to see in the theater. It's not a film that I would own. It's fine. It's definitely formulaic. I may have to check out the book just to see if I'm right about some of that backstory stuff, which I think it's sorely lacking. And again, watching, and I've said this to Justin multiple times, probably bugged the snot out of him with this, but getting to see Ryan Gosling and Ana de Armas in Blade Runner 2049 and then them together in this movie, it's night and day how much chemistry they have in the one and they don't in this one, and how charismatic Gosling is in that one, and the range, the dynamic acting that he does in that movie versus this one, it's hard to believe it's the same actor. So I'm not sure what, if that's the direction or what the choices that he's making. I'm not sure, but they are very different.
So here's the test. I think we would all watch a prequel or a spinoff so long as it included Chris Evans. But would we watch a sequel knowing that Chris Evans is dead?
That's an interesting question. You pose a good question, because Chris Evans is an anchor in this movie.
And he's dead now. And there's a sequel coming. So,
but
whoever the villain is going to have big shoes to fill.
And
size 11, apparently.
Billy Bob Thornton's dead, too.
That was great, Justin.
I'm okay that Billy Bob Thornton's dead.
Size 11. That could have been anybody, too.
That could have been anybody.
Yeah.
I'd probably watch it because
we'll watch it together.
But I wouldn't pay for it.
No.
I'll buy it.
It's part of your monthly subscription. Okay, anything else before we get out of here? Okay.
Sorry, Corey.
No, you know what?
Corey. We're glad you're back.
This is the kind of thing that real people have to deal with. Like when you're talking about movies with your buddy,
bullying.
You know, yes, that a little bit of that. This is the kind of thing you get with your best friends. You go watch a movie, you talk about a movie, and then you have to deal with someone that loves it, someone that thought it was mediocre, someone that thought, eh. Yeah. So
I love that you love it, Corey. That's good. I mean, yeah. That's,
you find out who your real friends are. I guess that's what you say.
Craig, what's our next movie?
For me, it's Just Another Thursday.
We're going to talk. There you go. Yeah. We're going to get out of here. So, guys, thank you again. All of you, thank you so much for listening. And if you want to connect with us, you can find us on X and Facebook. Email us at readingbetweenreels@gmail.com, especially if you thought we were being too mean to Corey. You can use the SpeakPipe app on our website and send us a voicemail. If you did enjoy the show, please tell a friend. send them a link. Support us by writing a review on your favorite podcast catcher. There's so many different ways you can do that. And yes, let's talk about our next episode. As decided upon by our amazing listeners, you guys, our next episode will be a review of The Count of Monte Cristo in 2002.
Joe's right.
Yeah, Jim Caviezel. Send us an email or voicemail about that, from your favorite moments from that film, and we will share that on that episode. And we also have our next few reviews after that are also going to be decided upon by you guys. So you can vote for these future movies using polls posted on our X profile page. So look for that. And of course, on our Facebook group, which had a big turnout thanks to Justin for this last one. So look for both of those. You can also email us or speak pipe us on those both. But here we go. Round two. It is, the choices are The Fugitive, starring Harrison Ford, Dungeons and Dragons.
I haven't seen it.
And Air Force One.
One of these things is not like the other.
That's true. So make your choices known, people. Voting closes on Tuesday, 5/21.